WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Stay tuned for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, October 22nd, 2002. U.S. refines plans for war in cities. An important article by Eric Schmidt and Tom Shanker in today's New York Times. The American military is training furiously and polishing a plan for attacking Baghdad that calls for isolating the city and taking control of it. At the same time, the New York Post, in an article by Deborah Oren, says the war is on ice. So says a report from Pentagon officials. But what they mean by being on ice is that they plan a delay of 2 or 3 months for the war to start in March or April instead of January or February. The Pentagon says it's revising its timetable for up to 135 days because President Bush is doing a little dance with the UN Security Council. As you recall, he doesn't have support from any other country except for Great Britain, and even it's not from the people in Great Britain themselves, but only from Prime Minister Tony Blair. Yet, Bush has confirmed over and again a zero-tolerance policy towards Iraqi President Saddam Hussein. In other words, no matter what happens, the U.S. has definitely decided it is going to invade Iraq.
Well, actually, Maya, the article is pretty shamelessly explicit. Unless Saddam Hussein lists all weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological, and nuclear, the crunch will come very quickly, according to the New York Post. If the Iraqis say they don't have weapons of mass destruction, that the chemical and biological and nuclear weapons imputed to them are propaganda fictions, which indeed they are, then that will be a casus belli. And the article goes on to say, if he lies in the declaration of weapons, there will be zero tolerance. We go in. There will be no games. There will be no knock on the door. There will be no wait a minute. There will be zero tolerance. And Bush has stated that these putative weapons of mass destruction pose a direct threat to the United States, and therefore he is already authorized to launch an attack on Iraq without any further ado. So this little dance at the United Nations is just that. It is a pretext for preparing for the inevitable strikes, lightning strikes, on any given moment's notice by the Pentagon, well in preparation for the assault.
And as we have reported since March on Taking Aim, the U.S. has been bombing on almost a daily basis. The U.S. and British warplanes have been bombing Iraq in the north and in the south, taking out aircraft radar installations and the fiber optic network that the Chinese helped build in Iraq, and attacking cities throughout the south of Iraq. A pincer movement to cut off and isolate the area around Baghdad. Today, why war? Why war is the feature of Taking Aim this week and next. And why war is the title of the premium, the 3-hour premium, two 90-minute audio cassettes or CDs. Why War, a blockbuster program dealing with historical analysis, political theory, a detailed documentation of plans for the current invasion of Iraq, and concluding in the second part, which we will broadcast a portion of which next week, a discussion of permanent war, the stakes for the working class. Why War? We hope you can stay tuned for this special 3-hour broadcast today and again next week. And remember, it's a $100 premium. You call 212-209 2950. Now, we don't want to interrupt the portions that we played today of Why War, so we'd like you to stay by your phone. If you're in your car and you have your cell phone, keep it easy at hand, and you might even want to put the WBAI number in as one of your instant numbers to call, so it makes it easy. 212-209-2950. We're going to give you a little taste of what you might be hearing on Why War, of what you will be hearing, and then we're going to go and play a good portion of it. Now, even if you're hearing a portion of it, you're not going to hear the whole thing, because this is that time of year where you can join with all of us to make sure that programs like Taking AIM remain on the air, because WBAI is our radio station. It doesn't belong to General Electric. It doesn't belong to Disney. It is the station that is yours and ours, and it's the only place that you're going to hear programming like Taking AIM, as everyone has been writing to us and saying and letting the station know. Programs like Taking AIM with Ralph Schoenman and myself are very special, and it's only a station like WBAI that takes a chance and that affords an opportunity for programs like Taking AIM. So again, 212-209-2950. And I also would like to let you know that Ralph and I are going to be in New York this coming weekend. And throughout the program, we're going to be giving you the addresses and the times of the three distinct events. So you can either come Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, or we hope you can make it to one of those. For those of you who cannot go to the anti-war demonstrations in Washington, this is an excellent opportunity to join with all of us in a protest against the invasion of Iraq. Ralph, do you want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the war before we go to the tape of Why War?
As our repeated programming has documented, and as Why War sets out in full detail, this is a war that had been prepared since the 1970s, when U.S. rulers had made it explicit that their task was to seize the oil resources of the Arabian Peninsula and of the Gulf, and in which those very Pentagon and banking and financial spokespersons spelled out that without control over the oil and natural gas of the Central Asian and region and of the Arabian Gulf, the U.S. was facing the prospects of a depression on the scale of the 1930s. And the enormous wealth, which they calculate in terms of $5 trillion short-term profit, was described by Pentagon analyst Robert Tucker as a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. On October 11, 2002, in the New York Times, Nicholas Kristof published an article called Revolving Door Monsters. Remarkable in that the article acknowledges that the monsters that are being held before the American people as a pretext for war were not only of American creation. After all, Saddam Hussein was the U.S. ruler's man in Baghdad for 27 years, an asset of the CIA who was used to assassinate Abdulkarim Qasim when the Iraqi Revolution had unfolded in 1958, and under the pressure of the workers and peasants of Iraq, oil was being prepared for nationalization, and the oil companies were excluded from all but one half of 1% of the areas of Iraq.
Well, Ralph, don't give away Why War. Let's.
Well, actually, in the article on October 11th, Nicholas Kristof, in support of his thesis of revolving door monsters, is citing Raad al-Qadiri, the chief analyst at the Petroleum Finance Company in Washington. And he states, this is not driven by any Iraqi provocation. You have a regime that is always keeping its head down. This is driven by a particular constituency in the United States, says the New York Times article, and they spell out what that is. The centers of finance capital and of the oil industry is spoken for by their hired hands, Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Pearl and Armitage and Wolfowitz, the whole crowd, and they're driving us into permanent war, war for oil, blood for oil.
And this is the exploitation of the people of the United States, of you and me and our families, our friends, our colleagues, as well as the devastation of the peoples of the world. Now, before we go to why war, I'd like you to call WBAI. Let us know early on how much you appreciate Taking Aim. And that's 212-209-2950. Let us know. $100 gets the premium of Why War. And if you also want to become a member of WBAI, Michael G. will be letting you know about the different options of how you can be a contributor. Remember, you're not limited to $100. You can contribute $1,000, $5,000, and even more. Or if you're unemployed or on a very low income monthly stipend, then you can contribute what you can.
That's
because
right.
Every bit helps.
You're right.
WBAI on the air.
You're so right, Maya. That's a very good note to end on. Just before we go to the taped portion of Taking Aim, Why War, any amount that you can contribute to this radio station is really very, very welcome. This is not usually a Ralph and Maya's time slot. This is another producer's time slot. This is a Talkback's time slot. But this is an extended edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Now, they have, certainly three, I know probably more than 3 hours worth of material. We won't be able to get to all of it this afternoon, but certainly a good portion of it this afternoon. So we'd like those phone calls to ring right now with your calls of support, your pledges of support, your financial support to this radio station, and particularly this program, Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. You say that you, through emails, through letters, through phone calls, that you like the programming that Ralph and Maya have put together. Well, we need to hear from you now. We need to hear the phones ring. We need to hear you calling in from New Jersey, from Connecticut, from Long Island with your financial support to keep this program, to keep this radio station on the air, this radio station that's bold enough to present this kind of programming to you. You're not going to hear this on any other radio station on the FM dial. So we thank you now as we have three calls coming in. Let's start this ball rolling with your calls of support for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. For a pledge of $100, you will get two 90-minute cassettes. Now, this is the thing. This has never been heard before. This material that they're getting ready to share with you has never been aired before. You may have heard other material that they have brought to you before about 9/11 and connections between Bush and Bin Laden and the whole Saudi family. But this, what they're getting ready to share from, with you now, has never been aired before. So why don't you make the pledge of support right now, 212-209-2950. $50 is the regular subscription to WBAI. You can become a member at that entry-level rate using your Visa, your MasterCard, or American Express. We have something called electronic funds transfer. You can engage that as well. Talk to the people in Tally. We have volunteers standing by prepared to take your calls right now, your financial support of this radio station. 212-209-2950. If you're just tuning in, this is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM on the web at WBAI.org. Maya?
Michael, yes. Why War is, as you said, very different. It is a program that's like a book. You want to keep years and years, and you'll want to share with your friends, family, and colleagues.
Because what we do, Maya and Michael, is we deal with the realities of American policy as it's rooted in our ruling class and capitalist structure literally since 1812 and 1820, when every major spokesperson was talking about and documenting the necessity for expansion, for grabbing resources, expansion for dominating markets, and the need to develop a war machine for that purpose, globalism already being discussed openly by the major spokespersons of U.S. Industrial capital in the 1860s and the 1870s, securing the Pacific market. We deal with that. We document it. We cite its relevance to the present situation. We weave back and forth, recreate a picture of the structure of power and its history in this country.
And why war was taped in the studio. We're coming to you now by telephone. And why war has excellent quality. It is a program we're sure you're going to want. So, Michael, if any moment you are ready to start Why War, we'll come back and be with you all.
Let me just point out, Maya and Michael, before we do that, that in today's San Francisco Chronicle, a very, very significant article that illuminates the precise developed thesis of Why War, resurgence for nuclear labs. The scientists are designing weapons for war and planning nuclear tests.
Well, Ralph, that's a good tease. We'll come back to that later.
Okay.
All right, very good. We will move on with the program, Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, a special edition going up until 6 p.m. this evening. Why War? Please stay tuned, and please, as Maya said, put that redial, put that number into the cell phone or your phone at home or phone at work, wherever you are, and make that call to WBAI right now and take out a pledge to this radio station, 99.5 FM, WBAI. Why? Why war?
Why war? Vice President Dick Cheney, speaking before the Veterans of Foreign Wars National Convention on August 26, 2002, said, "The danger to America requires action on many fronts all at once." His speech provides the classical propaganda for war. As Vice President Cheney continued, "We must take the battle to the enemy." "We are closer," he said, reporting what Secretary of Defense Dick Rumsfeld had put. "We are still closer to the beginning of the war than we are to its end. The United States has entered a struggle of years, a new kind of war against a new kind of enemy. There is no doubt they wish to strike again, and that they are working to acquire the deadliest of all weapons. We must go wherever the terrorists operate. It is our only option. We must find them where they dwell, stop them in their planning, and one by one bring them to justice." That was Vice President Dick Cheney. Why war?
And actually, Maya, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Armitage, Pearl all elaborated upon their constant theme. This is a war that will not end in our lifetimes or those of our children. And they specifically targeted at least 60 countries that were in line for American preemptive strike in the permanent war that now defines the policies of U.S. capitalist rulers.
If we try to understand the policies of U.S. rulers at the level where decisions are made, we can say that such policies are characterized by the necessity for continued expansion. Let's look at history. The War of 1812-14 against England was followed by and allowed a westward expansion of the United States beyond the Mississippi. Some years later, the Monroe Doctrine solidified the supremacy of the United States over the whole American continent. Though before the end of the 19th century, the westward movement had reached the Pacific Ocean, even this did not satisfy U.S. expansionism. With regard to Latin America, Richard Olney, then the Secretary of State under President Grover Cleveland, would declare, quote, "Today the United States is practically sovereign on this continent, and its will is law wherever we intervene."
This was the thesis that was articulated by the celebratory historian of American imperialism, Frederick Jackson Turner. And it was representative of the attitude of the ruling class, the capitalist class, on the limits of frontier. Quote, the needs of the United States are an aggressive foreign policy. We have to establish an interoceanic canal, awaken our naval power, and extend our control to encompass faraway islands and countries closer to us in order to demonstrate clearly we are on the move. We shall continue to expand, unquote. At the very time that this was written, the United States was in a transition from an agricultural to an industrial economy. The conquest of the continent, which was in essence a genocidal extermination of the indigenous inhabitants, was not just for new lands to till, but to capture raw materials and to sell finished products at exorbitant profits, to establish new natural resources and then to conquer new markets. It was the need for markets that was essential to what, at the turn of the century, had become known as, quote, big business, unquote, which foresaw and feared constantly the secular crisis of overproduction that is endemic to capitalism. And this expansion of markets would be replaced by economic dominance and expansion in countries across the planet. William Appleman Williams, the historian, wrote, quote, expansionism became the central motivating force in U.S. foreign policy. To a great extent, the same was true for U.S. expansion into overseas markets, since the capitalists explained economic crisis in terms of inadequate domestic market to sustain their profit and to maintain the capitalist economy.
William Appleman Williams wrote, quote, we must have...
Actually, Maya, that's Senator Frye.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Senator Frye then wrote, stated, we must have the Chinese market or we shall have a revolution.
And Brooks Adams concluded that the United States would stagnate if it did not consolidate its control over Latin America and make the Far East into an economic colony. 50 years before that, John Quincy Adams had used Christian theological language to articulate the same thing. The moral obligation upon which commercial relations are based is exclusively and entirely the Christian proverb, love thy neighbor as thyself. But John Quincy Adams went on, the Chinese are not Christian. They do not consider they should love their neighbors as themselves. They have a system that is hostile to our commercial aspirations. The principle of the Chinese Empire is anti-commercial. It is high time that this outrage against human decency was ceased, unquote.
And Cabot Lodge in 1895 stated, quote, to retain our commercial supremacy in the Pacific, we must control the Hawaiian Islands and stay on Samoa, end quote. The declaration of war against Spain for Cuba was a favorable occasion to snatch up the Philippines in the name of the crusade to civilize. As President McKinley then said, quote, the Lord had said that the United States had the duty of educating and elevating the Philippines in the Christian civilization, and by the grace of God, to do all that we can for our brother nation, for whom Christ also died. But in the same breath, McKinley added, quote, the Philippines are ours forever. And right behind them, there is the immense Chinese market. We shall not leave either one.
It was shortly after this, in 1899, that President McKinley articulated the principle of the open door. The open door was the rationale for establishing an armed and commercial beachhead in China and to challenge the spheres of influence of the European imperial powers. The Press of Philadelphia commented then, McKinley's declaration is as important as the Monroe Doctrine was for establishing U.S. control in the Americas over the last years. It protects the present and prepares the future, unquote. the principle of the open door, namely, of the far reach of American expansionist capitalism, has been the central defining dogma of U.S. rulers, and it is the ideology of American imperialism per se. But it has its roots throughout the course of bourgeois history in the United States in a doctrine of superiority, a sentiment that is inherently racist. Referring to the indigenous American Indians, Josiah Strong had said, "These tribes were created as the forerunners of a superior race. They are voices that cry in the desert, 'Make way for the Lord.'"
And then let us look at the words of President Woodrow Wilson. "If," said Wilson in 1912, "America had not had free enterprise, it would not have any sort of liberty at all." And again in 1912, Wilson reiterated, quote, "Our industry has developed to the point where it collapses unless it finds a free opening on the world market. Our home market is insufficient. We must have a foreign trade." And what he meant was then stated by Herbert Hoover, who in 1924 said, quote, "Foreign markets will be more important for us to assure a stable and normal function of our industry. It is of an importance that is greater than the percentage of export in relation to the home consumption."
This is the constant motif. This is the defining essence of American ideological rationale for imperialism, for U.S. hegemony, for what was called globalism as early as 1898. Super imperialism on a global scale.
The hunt for the world markets.
In 1898, Senator Beveridge stated, quote, "American industrial production has surpassed the needs of the American population. Our production of foodstuffs is beyond our own consumption. Destiny has dictated our future policy. World commerce will be dominated by the United States. We shall learn how from the mother country, Great Britain. We shall establish a worldwide system of control from which our products will be distributed per force. Our merchant marine will dominate the oceans. Around these commerce centers, clusters of vast self-governing colonies will be put in place, flying our flag and trading with us under duress. Our institutions will follow in the wake. American law and order, American civilization will settle these shores, until then steeped in darkness, and by our work as divine tools, these shores will come under our control and into a future beauty."
42 years later, the president of the National Industrial Conference Board, Virgil Jordan, took up the same idea and said on December 10th, 1940,
on behalf of Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, we must emphasize,
and on the eve of U.S. entry into World War II, quote, "Whatever the outcome of the war may be, America has taken the road towards imperialism on an economic plane as on all other planes of life. Some fear this word imperialism, so menacing and well known. Most people prefer, in the American way, to mask the fact that under a more vague expression, such as defense of the Western Hemisphere, but consciously or not, America is destined by her temperament, by her capacity, by her resources, and by the course of world affairs. Not alone those of the last few years, but since 1900, destined to follow this road. Truly," said Virgil Jordan, "we have no choice. We have but to continue on the road that we have been going along for a quarter of a century, and which began with the annexation of Cuba and the Philippines." And later, in that same speech, Virgil Jordan, president of the National Industrial Conference Board and one of the close associates of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, said, quote, "This empire is seeing its possibilities for expansion on the southern part of this hemisphere and west, in this Pacific, disappearing. The scepter falls in the hands of the USA."
But the Pacific was not enough. By 1941, Henry Luce, the publishing magnate and long associate of the intelligence services of the U.S., the Office of Strategic Services, and later of the Central Intelligence Agency, spoke of the, quote, American century, unquote, and called upon Americans to accept their duty and their mission to be the servants of the most powerful nation in all of the world and to make the full weight of U.S. influence wherever it could be imposed and by the methods, he said, that we find most opportune. And in his speech at Baylor University shortly after the end of World War II, Harry Truman, the President of the United States, reaffirmed the imperial principle. The American capitalist system can only survive in America itself when it becomes global. The entire world will be made to adopt the U.S. system, declared Truman in a defining document of global intent. The doctrine of globalism, it articulated since the 1890s, it is not a new phenomenon. It is rather the ideological rationale to provide the basis for a United States capitalist intervention in every corner of the world. It is the theory that has underlined the strategies and the tactics of all policymakers of U.S. rulers, whatever the nominal party. As we have been attempting to establish over a long period of time, it is the petrified apparatus of the United Nations that carries out these policies of U.S. rulers based upon the unilateral decision of U.S. rulers themselves as to where and how they intervene without any regard for the will of the victim parties.
So when Vice President Dick Cheney in August 2002 talks about the danger to America requiring action on many fronts at once, and that we are closer to the beginning of a war than we are to its end, and that America has entered a struggle of years of war, it is the verbiage that is new, but that the intent is the same.
And Maya, on June 18, 1966, Bertrand Russell, with whom I was closely associated, articulated what he called an appeal to the American conscience. He wrote, "I appeal to you, citizens of the United States, as a person concerned with liberty and social justice. Many of you feel that your country has served these ideals, and indeed the United States possesses a revolutionary tradition, which in its origins was true to the struggle for human liberty and social equality. But it is this tradition that has been produced by the few who rule the United States today. Many of you," Bertrand Russell said, "may not be aware fully of the extent to which your country is controlled by industrialists and by a small group of capitalists who depend for their power upon great economic holdings in all parts of the world. The U.S. rulers control over 60% of the world's natural resources. They contain less than 5% of the world's population. The minerals and produce of vast areas of the planet are thus possessed by a handful of people. I ask you to examine the words of your own leaders, who reveal the exploitation they practice." The New York Times, on February 12, 1950, said, quote, "Indochina is a prize worth a large gamble. In the North are exportable tin, tungsten, manganese, coal, lumber, and rice, rubber, tea, pepper, and hides. Even before World War II, Indochina yielded dividends for us, estimated at $300 million per year," unquote. And 1 year later, the United States State Department published a report which contained the following, quote, "We have only partially exploited Southeast Asia's resources. Nevertheless, Southeast Asia supplies 90% of the world's crude rubber, 60% of its tin, and 80% of its copra and coconut oil. It has for us sizable quantities of sugar, tea, coffee, tobacco, sisal, fruits, spices, natural resins and gums, and petroleum, iron ore, and bauxite," unquote. And the State Department's design for the conquest of wealth and resources, which required the subjugation of the peoples of Indochina, was sustained while the French were fighting in Vietnam, with U.S. backing and with U.S. financial and military support. By 1953, President Dwight Eisenhower stated, quote, "Now let us assume we lost Indochina. If Indochina goes, the tin and tungsten we so greatly value will cease coming. Let us be clear. We are after the cheapest way to prevent the occurrence of something terrible, the loss of our ability to get what we want from the riches of the Indochinese territory and from Southeast Asia," unquote.
And what Bertrand Russell concluded was that the war in Vietnam was a war designed to protect the continued control over the wealth of the region by American capitalists. He said, "When we consider that the fantastic sums of money spent on armament are awarded in contracts to the industries on whose boards of directors sit the generals who demand the weapons, we can see that the military and large industry have formed an interlocking alliance for their own profit." This is reflected earlier in the words of Smedley Darlington Butler. Smedley Butler had been a major general in the U.S. Marine Corps. He had been awarded 2 Congressional Medals of Honor for the capture of Veracruz, Mexico in 1914 and for the capture of Fort Riviere in Haiti in 1917. He had received the Distinguished Service Medal in 1919. By the time he retired in the 1930s, Smedley Darlington Butler, Major General, U.S. Marine Corps, had an epiphany. As Smedley Butler stated when he spoke in a speech in 1933.
Maya, that speech has a particular historical significance not only because of its content. Smedley Darlington Butler, Major General of the Marine Corps, was approached by a group of U.S. industrialists who plotted a coup to remove and overthrow the government of Franklin Roosevelt and to install a military regime that would provide a corporatist state on the models of Mussolini. Butler listened to the plans, recorded carefully the proposals made to him, and had an extraordinary speech before the American Legion. He exposed the plot. It's been memorialized in a book called "The War to Seize the White House." "The War to Seize the White House" by Jules Archer. But Smedley Butler declaimed in this extraordinary speech, "War is just a racket. I spent 33 years and 4 months in military service as a member of this country's most agile military force, the Marine Corps. I served in all commissioned ranks from second lieutenant to major general. Let me be very frank with you. During that period, I spent my time as a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I suspected I was just part of a racket at that time, but now I am sure of it. Like all members of the military profession, I never had a thought of my own until I left the service. My mental faculties were in suspended animation. I obeyed the orders of higher-ups. It is typical of everyone in military service. I helped make Mexico safe for American oil interests in 1914. I made Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Boys to collect their revenues. I helped in the rape of 6 Central American republics for the benefits of Wall Street. Yes, the record of racketeering is long as it is painful. I purified Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers from 1909 to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. In China, I saw to it that Standard Oil went its way unmolested. I had, as the boys in the back room would say, a swell racket. I could have given Al Capone a few hints. The best Capone could do was operate his rackets in 3 districts. I operated on 3 continents." Unquote.
Grant, we'll take a pause right there and bring Ralph Shulman and Maya Schoen back in. It is 3:44 in New York City. You're tuned to WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. This is a special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Shulman and Maya Schoen. Just a portion of the presentation that they've put together for you this afternoon. Why War? For a pledge of $100. This is all new material, and they'll tell you about that in just a minute. For a pledge of $100, two 90-minute cassettes never heard before on these airwaves. Ralph and Maya, are you back with us?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, and
That was an interesting note to take a pause on there.
I think so, and you know, it's interesting, Michael, because when you read today's newspapers, it's as if Smedley Butler had written that speech yesterday.
Yes, indeed it is.
You know, the Grand Rapids Press on October 16th reported the remarks of William Seidman, a commentator for CNBC, who had been an advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Bush Sr. Seidman is a former chairman of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and headed the Resolution Trust Company, which is the federal agency which was created to bail out the savings and loan industry to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars which were passed on to the American workers. And in the Grand Rapids Press, they quote Seidman in a secret meeting of the State Department in a briefing in which U.S. plans for the military occupation of Iraq were outlined. And in this the meeting, Seidman states that getting rid of weapons of mass destruction is not the issue. Getting control of the oil, that's the particular issue of importance. We will set up a MacArthur-like government in Iraq, and if we are in Iraq, no one else will be able to get the oil except us, unquote. Seidman, quoted in the Grand Rapids Press October 16th, but had Smedley Butler been alive to hear it.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we are not hearing about today, we did hear some years ago with Bush 1, there was some mention of oil, at least in the press, and the public was talking about not going to war for oil, but it's virtually absent in the discourse now.
Yes, and you see, Michael, some references say in the Washington Post here and there, you'll see, and of course in the British press.
In the Financial Times in particular, it's the Financial Times. It's always the financial press, like the Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times in Great Britain, that really get to the roots, the economic roots of these wars.
They're not self-conscious about it. For them, this is ABC. This is what they're about. And very often, the facade is simply the mask slips. But what's useful about this, Michael, I think, is that when it derives this information from the horse's mouth, as it were, it makes it much more difficult for the apologists, the journalists like Thomas Friedman, who I like to call the Hannibal Lecter of American journalism, to engage in their shameless propaganda for war and devastation on victim peoples.
I want to remind people that they can call for the premium Why War. You've heard one small portion of it already, and I'm sure you're going to want to listen again and again and let everyone else listen to it that you know. So that's 212-209-2950. And then Michael will tell you about other ways that you can support WBAI and show your support for Taking Aim. But first, I want to let you know that we're going to be in New York this coming weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, October 25th, 26th, 27th. And on Friday, we're going, our program is called The Advancing Decline of Corporate Capitalism, Permanent War and State Terror. And it's an event co-sponsored by the Marxist School and the Harlem Anti-War Coalition. It's at 7:30 at St. Mary's Church, which is at 521 West 126th Street. And on Saturday, we're going back to the subject that many of you are interested in and have told us so, and that's 9/11 False Flag Operation, and that's at 7 o'clock downtown at St. Mark's Church. That's at 131 East 10th Street, which is the corner of 2nd Avenue and 10th Street. And that's co-sponsored by ourselves, Taking Aim, and the Lower East Siders for Peace and Justice. And Sunday, we're back in Harlem at Oberia Dempsey. And that's co-sponsored by ourselves and Alumbe Brass of Africa Kaleidoscope, another WBAI program that I hope you listen to on Thursdays and support.
Yes, quite and right. I believe I'll let you finish in just a moment. I first met Ralph and Maya around maybe 10 years ago or 91, a little bit further than that. Either was that Harriet Tubman or Oberia Dempsey?
Harriet Tubman.
Harriet Tubman. And you were talking about your book, Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. I think this was just before or just as the war, the first Gulf War took place. And it was really an overwhelming response by the community coming out to hear this information for the first time. And the only reason why I mentioned that is because many people may not be familiar with you. We don't have people that are listening on a 24-hour basis and listen every Tuesday to your program, but you have been part of the community bringing this information, at least to my knowledge, for the past 10 years, and certainly better with your trips to the Middle East and so on. So this is something that this community, this radio listening community, is somewhat familiar with, and we're asking you to support this radio station and this program in particular, Taking Aim, a special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Shulman and Maya Shone, by taking out a subscription to this radio station and getting the premium that is being offered this afternoon, Why War? Taking Aim, Why War? For a pledge of $100. You're supporting WBAI. You're supporting this particular program that it's taken a lot to put this together for you this afternoon. Ralph and Maya are on the phone lines now, but the material that you will be getting is something that was produced in the studio, so it's all clean and pristine. So make those calls right now. We have three calls on the line at 212-209-2950. This is a commercial-free radio station, a listener-sponsored radio station. We do not have corporations underwriting the programming here. We have you, the listeners, who support this program, support this radio station, have done so for over 40 years. So please make your calls right now for this program, Taking Aim with Ralph Shulman and Maya Shone.
We're still hearing from people, Michael, who were used to listening to us at Friday mornings, and they didn't know we moved to Tuesdays at 5. So if you're listening for the first time, and you tune in normally to another program at this time, we're glad to meet you, and we should know that we're regularly on Tuesdays from 5 to 6. And you need to hear on the Internet, it's at www.wbai.org. And it's wonderful that through the streaming of the Internet, we have people who listen to us regularly in Egypt and in Europe and Seattle, Washington, and Canada, and New Hampshire and Vermont, where we hear from people. So thanks to WBAI for keeping people throughout the world informed with what is happening in the world. So please call 212-209-2950. Now, at Oberia Dempsey, we're going to start a little earlier so people can get to work the next day, and that'll be at 5 p.m. on Sunday, and the subject will be the invasion of Iraq. And we're also going to show, as Michael was saying about trips to the Middle East, I'm going to show some of the slides that I took of the massacre of Sabra and Shatila.
We were in the camps of Sabra and Shatila. 30 minutes after the last wave of slaughter, we spent 4 days dodging militia, interviewing survivors. It is a searing record of the genocidal slaughter that was unleashed in the Palestinian camps. Not just were they designed to reduce the population, as it was called, from 500,000 to 50,000 people in Lebanon, they were the prelude to what is taking place now. Palestinian camps, villages, towns, cities of the West Bank and Gaza.
It was just yesterday that it was reported that an entire village, a Palestinian village that has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, that the people could no longer tolerate the assault from the settlers, many of them coming from Brooklyn itself, who had come to Israel to displace the Palestinians, and they've been attacking them on an almost daily basis. And in order to protect the safety of their children, the entire village was evacuating. This is a terrible situation where people are being forced out of their homeland. So we'll be discussing 48-2, the expulsion of the Palestinians under cover of war, because that is the plan, under the cover of an invasion of Iraq. We believe, and many of the scholars within Israel itself believe, that the Sharon government is planning an expulsion of the Palestinians.
It's been spelled out by Martin Ben-Krevel, the military historian with the Israeli Mossad, who has explicitly described the plans to expel the Palestinian population under the cover of the coming war.
So these are some of the subjects that we detail on Taking Aim. As many of you know, our shows are very fully documented. We comb many newspapers here and abroad and pick out the little tidbits, the quotes, the rulers speaking. What is it, Ralph?
Well, no, the data itself, as you say, Maya, we put it together, and we source and document the evidence of the undeclared plans of a relentless and ruthless imperial ruling class in the United States, and of such instruments as the Zionist government, the State of Israel, and its murderous designs upon the Palestinian people, and on the resources of the peoples of the Arab world.
Now, this can't bring this to you without your support for WBAI, because it takes funds to keep the electricity on, to keep the tower broadcasting. And as you know, WBAI has a very wide reach, over three states. It's not a little local community radio station. It keeps the people of Connecticut, New Jersey, and sometimes even Delaware, and as I said,
and
even
New
York, of course, and people throughout many parts of the United States informed and connected, makes us into one community. And that's why it's your help. And if you're listening on the Internet in Seattle, you too can make a contribution to WBAI through the secure connection that's on the Internet. And that's 212-209-2950. And, of course, if you're using a credit card, or you can make a contribution monthly through the new bank exchanges that they have through the wonders of computer technology, that is greatly appreciated, because it gives the, with your credit card contribution, it's an instant cash, and it saves all the back and forth of trying to send out a bill.
You save
so
those
that
trees.
That is a
we
really
to
nice
trees.
Way to help the station.
It is.
And also, if you can make it a monthly contribution, that gives the station an income flow so that we can predict, you know, what's the revenue in the bank. So 212-209-2950.
Right, and it goes into a common pot for the entire radio station, not just this specific program, although we are asking you to call right now and make your contributions for Taking Aim with Ralph and Maya. But it goes into a common pot. All of the producers do this collectively so that we can continue to broadcast, and everyone understands the importance of the station in and of itself. And so we're asking you to go to your phones right now. If you appreciate the program that you're hearing right now, if you're interested in just the concept of being commercial free and listener sponsored, we're asking you to go to your telephones, at least make a basic subscription to WBAI. $50 is a basic level, entry level subscription rate to WBAI.
And Michael, the stakes are very high for
all of us.
They are very, very high. As I had indicated before in today's San Francisco Chronicle, the lead story, the nation's nuclear weapons laboratories, dismissed until recently as a relic of the Cold War, have been transformed into the critical element in the Bush administration's forceful security and military policies, moving into areas of research and development considered virtually taboo. And with their budgets at the highest levels in years, the Bush people are preparing a nuclear weaponry and developing a laser that simulates the heat of a nuclear explosion. I call this a new chapter, said John Brown, director of Los Alamos Laboratory. Our mission is shifting now. As we enter the 21st century, we are preparing the weapons for widespread use. This is the clear indication of the genocidal war, the real weapons of mass destruction that our rulers are visiting upon the world. That's why war. That's why we need WBAI. That's why we need to build the movement. That's why we need to stop these people in their tracks.
That's right. So we need to hear from you. Speaking of what we need to hear from you right now. We have four callers on the line, five callers on the line right now, taking out at least, we hope, a basic subscription to this program, this radio station, WBAI, listener-sponsored radio WBAI. For a pledge of $100, you will get Why War. It's produced by Ralph Schoeman and Maya Schoen. This is a special edition of Taking Aim. You will get two 90-minute cassettes never heard before, material that has been never heard before. Now, some of you may be familiar with Taking Aim from past programs that they've done, the 9/11 specials and so on, but this is brand new material, and we're asking you if you're interested in that, if you're, as I said, interested in the idea of a listener-sponsored radio station and the fact that we can bring you this information without interruption, without commercial interference. Now, yes, we are interrupting right now because this is what we have to do to maintain ourselves listener-sponsored and commercial-free. No one is telling Ralph or Maya or any of the other producers what they can say and what they cannot say, information that they can bring and that they cannot bring to the radio station. We're bringing this information to you, they're bringing this information to you, and letting you decide for yourselves whether this is information that you think that you should have and be a part of your overall informational library stream, if you will, or not. If you do appreciate this, we're asking you to join those six people on the line now and make your calls, make your contributions to this radio station, your financial contributions. We have to pause from time to time, 3 to 4 times a year, to ask for your help, for your financial support. That's what we're doing right now. We're in the second week of our fundraising drive. In another week, we will be done, and we'll be back to regular programming. And we won't be asking you for funds until January is sometime, late in January. So make those calls right now, 212-209-2950. Take out a subscription. Get the two 90-minute cassettes if you'd like. If you'd like to get the WBAI baseball cap or a tote bag or coffee mug, talk to the people in Tally. We have a number of people that are down in the Tally room right now that are prepared to take your calls and take your pledges right now. The calls have dropped off a little bit, so we'd like to encourage you. If you have a few minutes, it's just 2 minutes past 4 o'clock, and we're asking you if you have a break, if you can take a break, if you can pull off to the side of the road, if you're driving right now, leaving home, or moving throughout your workday, and can call us up and take out a subscription to WBAI and get these premium, please do so right now. It takes about 3 minutes and then you're done. You will have made your contribution. If you made a contribution last year and you haven't made one this year, please do so right now. We're going to go back to the material in just a few moments, but we do need to hear from you. We have five calls on the line now. We have a room full of volunteers that are awaiting your calls right now from New Jersey. New Jersey has always come through very, very strong for this radio station, so we'd like to hear from you in Long Island, in Connecticut, on Staten Island. We'd like to hear from you in Queens, in Brooklyn. Here we go. 212-209-2950. Taking Aim, Why War? with
and
Ralph
the thing,
Schumer,
Michael, is often when people are at work, they say, oh, I'm going to call when I get home.
Mm-hmm.
And procrastination has a way of extending things, and then you forget, you get occupied with something else.
Mm-hmm.
So while you're thinking about it,
you're
listening, now is the time to punch in 212-209-2950. Don't wait. Do it when you're thinking about it. Because a program like Taking Aim couldn't exist on a commercial radio station where every 2-3 minutes you're stopping. You can't even complete a full thought.
That's right.
And here we start at 5 and we continue straight through.
You can't even initiate an illicit thought. That's the problem with the commercial radio.
Right, and Ralph Meyer, even in the fundraising that we do, and we have to pause every 25 minutes or so, we're giving you this information without interruption then. So we're asking you, we have 7 calls on the line right now, and I'm sure this is going to pick up as we move throughout this 4 o'clock hour into the 5 p.m. hour from 5 to 6. I know those phones are going to be ringing, so don't wait until the last minute, until that last hour when we have to call upon people throughout the station to stop what they're doing to go into the tally room and make and help answer those phones. Please make those calls now. We have 8 calls on the line now at 212-209-2950. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. We're on the web, on the internet at WBAI.org. And as soon as we put Maya and Ralph on hold for a moment, they're going to go back to the internet. So why don't you join us on the internet? You can make a secured pledge on a pledge on that secured website, WBAI.org. You can get the regular subscription or the baseball cap or the tote bag or whatever. But if you're interested in Why War, that was produced by Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoeman, you have to call us and make that call to 212-209-2950.
And networking is also important, so I have a second call I'd like folks to make, least a second call.
Sure.
And maybe more. After you call WBAI, call some friends and let them know
that
they too should be tuning in. And while they're tuning in, they can then make a contribution, because that's how we move out into the community with networking and then introduce people to WBAI.
And that's why, one of the reasons why you're coming to New York in a week, so that you can continue networking.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, we're just about ready to go back to the tape portion of this program.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, an expanded edition going up to 6 o'clock this evening. It's approaching 7 minutes past 4 p.m. Usually, you'd be listening to Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton. He'll be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. I think it's 3 p.m. I'm hoping it will be 3 p.m. tomorrow with Hugh Hamilton. Right now, Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Why War? For a pledge of $100, make those calls right now. 2 90-minute cassettes never heard before, material that has been never heard before on Taking Aim and over these airwaves. Why War? 2 90-minute cassettes for a pledge of $100. Commercial-free radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. Stay tuned as we continue.
Ritchie pointed out that at the time of World War I, 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were created, and that was just according to the public IRS Internal Revenue Service records. What, he said, were the numbers who didn't disclose how much they had made. And as he wrote, the World War, meaning World War I, rather our brief participation in it, has cost the United States some $52 billion. Figure it out. That means, at that time, $400 to every American man, woman, and child. And we haven't paid the debt yet. We are paying it. Our children will pay it. And our children's children probably still will be paying the cost of that war. The normal profits of a business concern in the United States are 6, 8, 10, and sometimes 12%. But war profits, ah, said Smedley Butler, that is another matter. 20, 60, 100, 300, and even 1,800%. The sky is the limit. All that the traffic will bear. Uncle Sam has the money. Let's get it. Of course, it isn't put that crudely in wartime. It is dressed into speeches about patriotism, love of country, and we must all put our shoulders to the wheel. But the profits jump and leap and skyrocket and are safely pocketed. And Smedley Butler gives a few examples. Take our friends, he says, the DuPonts, the powder people. Didn't one of them testify before a Senate committee recently that their gunpowder won the war or saved the world for democracy? But how did they do in the war? They were a patriotic corporation. The average earnings of the DuPonts for the period of 1910 to 1914 was $6 million a year. But that wasn't enough for the DuPonts. They managed to get along, but their average yearly profit during the war years of 1914 to 1918 were $58 million a year, 10 times that of normal times. And then, during the normal times, their profits were good. But the increase during the war years was more than 950%. And Smedley Butler goes on to talk about the steel companies, such as Bethlehem Steel, which turned to munitions making. Their profits went from that time $6 million to $49 million a year. Now remember, he's talking about money in terms of 1910-1914.
You multiply it by between 100 and 500 times in terms of real value, and of course the sequestered profits that go untaxed and unreported into banking accounts offshore.
And in this seminal piece by Major General Smedley Butler, he articulates what went for U.S. Steel, for Anaconda Copper, for Utah Copper, for leather companies, for International Nickel, for American Sugar Refining, which produced sugar for all the troops, for the chemical companies such as General Chemical. And he goes especially to the bankers because he, as he says, let us not forget the bankers who financed the Great War. If anyone had the cream of the profits, it was the bankers. But it is not just the steel for making the battleships. It's not just the copper for the armaments. It's not the gunpowder alone or the bankers. Butler talks about the manufacturers of the leather for saddles and of mosquito netting. After all, the companies that made mosquito netting sold Uncle Sam 20 million mosquito nets for the soldiers overseas. But, as he points out, there weren't any mosquitoes in France. And the airplane and engine manufacturers, they too got their just profits out of World War One. Sure. They were building planes, airplanes, but these airplanes never left the ground. Not one plane or motor out of the $1 billion worth ordered ever got into a battle in France during World War One.
And Smedley Butler says, the capital stock of these industries, of this capitalist war machine, registered 7,850%, 6% profits, 7,856% profit increase on their capital stock as a consequence of the war. War, said Smedley Butler, is a racket. It is an instrument for profit of unparalleled character that sustains the capitalist system to the benefit exclusively of its rulers.
And to talk about the meaning of war, why war, we can look at a seminal book written by Leon Trotsky, the War, and the International. Also written at the time of World War One, it was written in 1914.
But Maya, let me just say, before we turn to Trotsky, who is, of course, the premier Marxist analyst and articulator of the dynamics of capitalist economy, Smedley Butler concluded by estimating what statisticians, economics, and researchers calculated about the war cost. Their official numbers, and he says they're a fraction of the actual number, but he cites the official number, $52 billion extracted from the earnings of workers to be expended on this war. And the short-term profit for the immediate war manufacturers was $16 billion. And Smedley Butler said, that's how the 21,000 billionaires got their way. This $16 billion profit is not to be sneezed at. It's quite a tidy sum when it goes to the very, very few. And he says the Senate Nye Committee probe of the munitions industry and wartime profits, despite what were considered sensational disclosures, barely scratched the surface. He says the War Department decides it is a wonderful plan to spring. The government names a committee with the War and Navy Departments ably represented under the chairmanship of a Wall Street speculator. The profits of 300, 600, 1600% of those who turn blood into gold are the defining element of what underlies World War One and the wars to come, wrote Major General Smedley Butler.
It's a good thing you pointed that out, Ralph, because Congress just passed the $355 trillion war budget, the so-called defense allocation for this year alone, and yet...
My, it was a bit. It was billion.
Billion. What did I say?
Trillion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The trillions represent, for example, $9 trillion were the Pentagon's expenditure on the record for a period of 40 years. But it's close to $400 billion. This budget that you're citing doesn't include all the ancillary aspects of the military enforcement arm. It doesn't include the 26 intelligence agencies. It doesn't include all of the infrastructure for implementing on the ground the military control. It's just the official expenditure for buying goodies for the Pentagon, and we have to put that in a context that we'll discuss in a short time about how something in the order of $4 trillion is disappearing from Pentagon books, disappearing and is lost offshore into numbered accounts and into the pockets of the profiteers.
Well, as Smedley Butler noted during World War One, it's on the backs of the workers themselves. And what you have now is the schools, for instance, in Richmond, California, are leaking. Students have to come to school with umbrellas during the winter, and students don't have textbooks, and teachers have to provide their own paper. Or when you have seniors who cannot afford the medications that are necessary for their health, and yet Congress cannot pass a Medicare bill that would cover prescription medications. Again, you have the profiteering of the pharmaceutical industry hand in hand with the profiteering of the war machine.
Before we do the Trotsky, let's just look at what you're describing here, because I think it's quite important to delineate when we talk about why war, what is the practical way it plays out in the lived economy of the United States. The conservative Cato Institute calculated that in every sector of the economy, the giant corporations are subsidized by the federal government. Congress finances 125 subsidy programs for the largest corporations at a net cost in 1998 of $85 billion a year without tax breaks. The top 17 corporations paid no federal income tax for 10 years. And when you add in the tax breaks, that was a subsidy at the turn of the last century of $100 billion a year, which was half the federal deficit. Let's look how it breaks down. In agriculture, agro-conglomerates receive $31.3 billion in U.S. government subsidies and $2.9 billion in tax rebates. The energy corporations were subsidized to the tune of $15 billion. Transportation conglomerates, $30 billion. Aerospace and high tech got subsidies of $16 billion. In construction, the major corporations received $17.4 billion. The financial services, the banks, the brokerage houses, the great centers of stock and bond speculation got $42 billion with tax breaks of $60 billion. Commodity credit subsidies for corporations from the U.S. government were $9.81 billion. Now, these aren't government programs. These were handouts to the corporate oligarchy that owns the government and that finances the two political parties with the proceeds. What does that mean? 60 cents of every tax dollar, this is before the Bush crowd increased all of this, 60 cents of every tax dollar went to the Pentagon, less than a dime to health care. 3 cents of that dollar allocated to housing, and much of that for the affluent. 2 cents to education, and most of that challenged to the schools of the affluent. 1 cent to generate employment. And while that was happening, a child was dying of poverty every 50 minutes in the United States. Hundreds of thousands of children are homeless each night. One out of five children in the United States goes to bed hungry and cold, without heat, without running water, and without electricity, in the rat-infested cages that pass for shelter
and
in our inner cities. And that is the meaning of capitalism addicted to war.
And in California, which is considered the seventh largest economy in the world, one in every four children goes to bed hungry and cold, without heat, running water, electricity. This is America today. To return now to World War One, Leon Trotsky in The War and the International, the Bolsheviks and World Peace, did a very important analysis of why war and what the evolution of war in the development of capitalism. He said, quote, "The whole globe, the land and the sea, the surface as well as the interior, has become one economic workshop, the different parts of which are inseparably connected with each other. This work was accomplished by capitalism. But in accomplishing it, the capitalist states were led to struggle for the subjugation of the world-embracing economic system to the profit interests of the bourgeoisie of each country. What the politics of imperialism has demonstrated, more than anything else, is that the old national state that was created in revolutions and wars," and he gave examples, the French Revolution of 1789 to 1815, which abolished feudalism and established the French nation state. And then in 1848 to 1859, the Franco-Prussian Wars, which brought about German unification under Prussian hegemony. 1864 to 1866, when you had the liberation of Italy from Austria and the unification of the Italian city-states in what is today Italy. And if you look at all this, what he says is that the nation-state has outlived itself and is now an intolerable hindrance to the economic development of capitalism.
All talk of the present bloody clash being a work of national defense is classical capitalist hypocrisy and blindness. On the contrary, speaking of the war in 1914, Leon Trotsky said, "The real objective significance of the war is the breakdown of the national economic centers and the substitution of a global world economy in its stead. By the way, the capitalist governments propose to solve this problem of imperialism is not through the organized cooperation of humanity's producers, but through the relentless exploitation of the world's economic system by the capitalist class of the victorious country, which country is by this war to be transformed from a great power into the world power. The war, he said, proclaims the downfall of the national state, but at the same time, it prepares the downfall of the capitalist system of economy. By means of the national state, capitalism revolutionized the economic system of the world, but it has divided the planet among oligarchies of great powers, around which were grouped satellites, small nations who live off the rivalry. The future development of world economy on a capitalist basis requires a ceaseless, relentless quest for new and ever new fields of capitalist exploitation, which must be obtained from one and the same source, the planet Earth. The economic rivalry under the banner of militarism will be accompanied by robbery and destruction on an unimaginable scale, which violate the elementary principles of human existence.
In referring again to World War I, what Leon Trotsky wrote, and it is amazing how true it is today, all the historical forces whose task it has been to guide the bourgeois society, to speak in its name and to exploit it, have declared their historical bankruptcy by the war. They defended capitalism as a system of human civilization, and the catastrophe born out of that system is primarily their catastrophe. The first wave of events raised the national governments and armies to unprecedented heights never attained before. For the moment, the nations rallied around them. But the more terrible will be the crash of the governments when the people, deafened by the thunder of the cannon, realize the meaning of the events now taking place in all their truth and frightfulness.
Capitalism, said Trotsky, is inexorably linked to war, to plunder, to mass destruction, and to a relentless genocidal murder on a scale never experienced before in human history. And he wrote, in these historical circumstances, the great majority of humankind, the working class, can have no interest in defending this outlived and antiquated and destructive system. The task is to create a different order under the control of the many. And the only way in which the proletariat can meet the imperialist perplexity of capitalism is by opposing to it as a practical program of the day, the democratic and socialist organization of world economy. War is the method by which capitalism, at the climax of its development, is driven to solve its insoluble contradictions. And to this bloody method, the workers of this planet must oppose their own method, the method of the social revolution.
War. You've been listening to
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, a special premium that we prepared for the WBAI Fund Drive. You've heard part of it. It's a 3-hour, 2 90-minute tape program, Why War, which goes into a complete analysis, historical analysis, starting from the early 1800s here in the U.S., political theory, as you just heard from the works of Leon Trotsky, not only a Marxist analysis, he created the Red Army, was somebody who really knew about war. Detailed documentation of plans for the current invasion of Iraq. And we conclude in the second part, which you'll hear portions of next week, a discussion of permanent war, the stakes for the working class. It's a special program that we prepared for you during the WBAI Fund Drive, Why War? And it's $100 at 212-209-2950. So keep those phones off the hook. Ralph?
Maya, the kinds of weaponry that are being prepared for the onslaught in Iraq and the ongoing war are truly weapons of total annihilation and mass destruction. They're now testing out their nuclear bunker busters and their laser weapons that create an inferno. And they are analogous to the fuel air explosives, the deadliest non-nuclear bombs, the Allied arsenal, as Time magazine described them, that disperse a hugely volatile mist over a large area. And then these clouds are ignited in a second explosion. And Time magazine described it as a blast that has the wallop of a nuclear device. The bombs suck up the oxygen. They pull the lungs and organs out of the victims' bodies. And the argument, the article continues that over Baghdad and over Mosul and over Basra and over Kirkuk at the time of the Gulf War, a black gossamer volatile mist was used in such magnitude that it incinerated sectors of the cities and destroyed all electricity, heat, and water to the devastated civilian neighborhoods. Another of the chemical weapons that were used was cinder gel, which burns with intense heat and stick to everything it touches and causes terrible casualties. Even when used in the proximity of intended targets, New York Times reported, its chief value is to deplete the air of oxygen. The napalm-fueled fire removes so much oxygen from the air that the victims throughout the region suffocate. These are fiendish weapons. They are chemical weapons. They are weapons of mass destruction.
If you're tuning in, you're listening to Ralph Schoenman. Normally at this time of the day, Hugh Hamilton is on with Talk Back. But today is a very special program for us. It's a three-hour show of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. We're normally on Tuesdays from 5 to 6. But WBAI, during this fund drive, has prepared time for the program is to have a special opportunity to bring extended program, and we're very glad to meet you if you're new to Taking Aim. And we'd like to tell you a little bit about what we do on Taking Aim, some of which you can tell by listening to the special show we have today, Why War? Ralph, why don't you tell people about what we've been doing over the past year on Taking Aim, what the program is about, how we focus on the structure of power and rule and so forth.
Yes, Taking Aim has sought to place its primary focus on who rules in the United States. We've described and laid out for people the 2% of the population that owns and controls 90% of the national wealth, that averages 14 corporate directorships per person. We've described how this tiny oligarchy has hegemony not only over the resources of our own society, but over 70% of the planet's resources for about 5% of the world's population. And that 5% of the world's population inside the United States is hardly the primary beneficiary. It's only this tiny oligarchy that derives the fundamental benefit from this extraordinarily brutal and exploitative system. That's the focus of Taking Aim in laying out for people the nature of power, how it works, what it does, and the ways in which our people are subject to a bombardment of propaganda designed to neutralize our capacities to act and to think. And we locate such things as 9/11, the destruction of the World Trade Center, and the attack upon the Pentagon, that seminal event of September 11th, 2001, as but the little continuation of the standard operating procedure of the U.S. ruling class whenever it prepares for a major onslaught, the next wave of onslaught, of contemporary onslaught, upon the wealth and the resources of others in other parts of the world. They prepare us for war by creating monsters, by generating pretexts, by inventing categories such as the category of terror. And we have tried over the weeks and months in Taking Aim to document how indeed it is the U.S. rulers who are the progenitors of real state terror. For these operations that they are describing, whether that of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or of Islamic fundamentalists, were funded by the Central Intelligence Agency. They were created by the Central Intelligence Agency. And through the enormous sophisticated echelon and promise and inslaw and converse hardware every single component of these little groups is monitored, penetrated, and directed. All of the putative terrorists have a history with U.S. intelligence. Mohammed Atta, trained at U.S. military installations. Al-Ghamdi, trained at U.S. military installations. And that is what we have sought to set out for people to understand, that we are looking at the false flag operations of a relentlessly ruthless ruling class that seeks to intimidate and terrorize our people in order to provide the pretext and the rationale and the acquiescence in devastatingly destructive plans of permanent war.
And what we mean by a false flag is that when the intelligence operatives, the CIA or the many other intelligence agencies within the United States and internationally, when they make it seem as if an operation is done by someone else, but when in fact they themselves are the authors of that operation. That is what we mean by a false flag. So one of our programs was 9/11 false flag operation. Now,
another's
you
called
could...
pretext, and another is called the pea soup of deception. We lay out for people how this system really works. Because in truth, brothers and sisters, and why war is a kind of concentration of this information and data, in truth, there has never been a major war of the United States for which a pretext was not created. Let's just look concretely at this. Take the example of the Spanish-American War, the defining imperial war that Mark Twain and the Anti-Imperialist League so passionately exposed and opposed and mobilized against. The Spanish-American War was launched by blowing up our own ship in Havana Harbor, the Maine. And then the rallying cry of the Hearst newspapers was, "Remember the Maine." The duplicitous Spaniards had blown up an American ship in Havana Harbor, and it was the pretext for seizing Cuba and for the first genocidal war of the 20th century, which was that imposed upon the Philippines. Remember what we were discussing here today in Why War, the citations from McKinley about the mission to civilize the Philippines? Civilize the Philippines? Almost 2 million people were slaughtered in that conquest. An ongoing war of annihilation that U.S. imperialists waged against the people of the Philippines to capture their resources and to establish a forward base for the conquest of China. And every major conflict of that nature, take the example of World War I, about which we have been doing such such intense broadcasting with respect to Why War. The sinking of the Lusitania, which was the casus belli, arose out of U.S. insurance companies notifying the German military to create the very casus belli that was the pretext for U.S. entry into World War I. The declaration of the United States that it was ready to seize hegemony over its rival imperial powers, nominal enemy and ally alike. And we have the example of Pearl Harbor, where it was well documented now that the United States was in total possession. They had broken the Japanese code. The Soviet intelligence services had alerted the United States to the pending attack on Pearl Harbor, which was itself a reactive attempt on the part of Japanese imperialism to counter U.S. destruction of 4 Japanese bases in all parts of Asia where the U.S. wanted to displace the Japanese and the British. And Pearl Harbor, for 6 months, the plans were known to the United States. It was allowed to proceed to provide the casus belli. We have the example of the Bay of Tonkin, the Gulf of Tonkin. So it goes, so 9/11, so war, as an operation long prepared by rulers who have as their rationale for these wars the conquest of resources, the domination of countries, and enormous profits to sustain their system. That is the kind of information, that is the kind of analysis, that is the leitmotif, if you like, of taking aim. We take aim on our rulers. We speak truth to power, and we seek to mobilize our people with information so they are armed with the necessary data to prepare ourselves for the resistance, the struggle, for the fight for control over our own society, which is a fight that we must wage to win.
And key to that is WBAI, a political and social and cultural resource for our community. It is WBAI that puts us in touch with you, you in touch with us, and creates an entire network, a community. That's why I say political, cultural resource, social resource, WBAI. And now is one of the few opportunities, although you can do it every day if you want, to contribute to WBAI, to keep this important resource flowing, with keep the information flowing. So get to your telephone, take this brief break, or if you have a portable phone, bring it towards your radio, 212-209-2950. We want all the phones off the hook. Many volunteers have come into the station, and we're here in California, so we can't see those phones ringing. So we're relying upon you to keep them ringing, ringing, ringing off the hook. You'll hear our voices, and we're going to go back to the Why War, the special premium. But it's a show that I know you're going to want to have, and you're going to want to share with others, just as many people have told us they've done with Pretext and Foreknowledge, which was a former premium on another fund drive. It's these rare fund drives that help you keep your station going. Remember, it is your station. So Why War was a very special historical, political, and we deal with the current situation of the invasion of Iraq. It's a very special program, something that you don't normally hear. We made it a little different than our normal Taking Aim shows. It includes many of the items that, you know, the method in which we prepare our Taking Aim shows, the intense research, but we do a lot more analysis, historical analysis, and for that reason we know you're going to want to have it. And that's $100, 212-209-2950. It's your way of supporting the station, and it's our way of providing a very special gift to you, our way of thanking you for keeping Taking Aim and the other important programs on WBAI.
That's right.
I want to say this about the importance of WBAI. Media of communication are totally dominated by the Pentagon and by the corporate elite in the United States. And they are a vehicle, a pass-through, an instrument for propaganda and for numbing people, and also for reducing them to robot-like acceptors. That's the intent. But for all this effort, with this cop glory television series, police glory, cop glory, and the celebration of military prowess, which is the constant leitmotif of programming, notably at all the sports events, whether it's the World Series or the Super Bowl or what have you. For all that, they are unable to obtain the acquiescence of our population, despite all the propaganda. At the time of the Gulf War, the Los Angeles Times ran an important story under the headline, "Marines Feel Pity and Horror as the B-52s Pound Iraqis." And it described the round-the-clock saturation carpet bombing of the B-52s, and the article read by John Balzer, "All night, night after night, Marines hear and feel the relentless grumbling. The skyline flickers hot orange. Through the soles of their boots, the Marines feel the sand quiver hundreds of miles from ground zero. They see the most fearsome sight of modern warfare, the carpet bombing of B-52s. And mixed with this wonder, these Marines are twinged with pity. Those people are out there doing the same thing we do," said Lance Corporal General Childress, a 20-year-old from Spotsylvania, Virginia, whose wife is expecting their first child. "They are scared for their families. Like us, they got families at home, children on the way. The B-52 bombings, the B-2 bombings that the Pentagon is preparing now will be 1,200 sorties a day." And this article at the time of the Gulf War described how the Saudis had calculated that the tonnages of high explosive bombs released on Baghdad exceeded the combined Allied air offensive of World War II, as reported in the New York Times. How can one begin to imagine the horror of the mass and murderous bombardment that U.S. rulers are preparing once again?
It is very frightening, Ralph and Maya. It is frightening contemplating about a B-52 raid that you don't even, people on the ground are not even aware, they cannot even see the aircraft approaching. It is just maybe some miles away, the earth starts to rumble, and then the next thing you know, it is on top of you. It's not, certainly not for me to make any analysis or try to make any analysis of this. That is what you are here to do, Ralph and Maya. But I just want to let people know that this station, part of the reason that this station exists is so that we can bring you this information, however uncomfortable it may be to hear. It is necessary information for us to have to make intelligent decisions, at least be aware. Maybe we're not able to do anything immediately, but we can, as Ralph, you said earlier, we can network, we can talk with other people, we can talk with people in our community, we can make the necessary contacts to our legislative persons, whomever they may be,
in
and
the
let
workplace,
them know.
In our union.
That's correct. All of these things. But we cannot do any of this unless we have this vehicle to get this information out, to get these words out, so that you can begin the process of organizing, of talking to different people, of sharing this information. Now, people are calling already. The phones have fell silent for the past couple of minutes because people have been listening, I'm sure, as I am. They're really shocked when they hear this information, because you have to understand that everyone that is listening at this particular time does not listen to WBAI 24 hours a day. I mean, my goodness. Some people do, and to those of you who do, bless you for listening to us and bless you for supporting us. But though there are many that do not, there are people that are calling in from Ridgewood, New Jersey. Deborah, thank you so very, very much. Calling in with a donation is getting the two 90-minute audio cassettes from Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, Why War, for a pledge of $100. Make those calls right now. Let's take advantage of this time before we approach 5 p.m. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. If you have some time and you can come down to the radio station, we're at 120 Wall Street and we're on the 10th floor. So come on down. We'll put you to work and you can answer some phones and meet some people here as well. Mary Kim from New York City, thank you so very much. Bergen Ludman from Bloomfield, New Jersey, 212-209-2950. Remember, the basic subscription in WBAI is $50, $25 if you're a student or senior citizen. We certainly know students are having a rough time just staying in school here in this metropolitan area, certainly all around this country. Please make your calls right now, 212-209-2950. You can use your Visa, your MasterCard, or American Express. The phone lines are open right now. Take a few minutes and make that call to WBAI and say you want to get the package that Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen have put together for us this afternoon, Why War. Oliver Bish from Brooklyn, New York, has called in with a pledge for WBAI. McErnan Brendan from New York City. Nope, from Bell Harbor, New York. Thank you very much for your support. 212-209-2950. We need to hear those phones ringing right now before we move on to the next segment, a powerful segment upcoming in the 5 o'clock hour when you usually would hear Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Let's give them a big send-off as we go into this 5 o'clock hour.
We want to hear from people from the Bronx, from Manhattan, from Queens, Brooklyn, and Staten Island, too.
And keep in mind that it is our working class, our working people who fight these wars,
right,
who are the cannon fodder.
That's right. That's
the Daily Telegraph described the real feelings of U.S. soldiers, the Gulf War veterans now, 100,000 of whom have suffered from the consequences of the depleted uranium and the chemical weapons that the United States was using, affecting our own soldiers. But the Daily Telegraph described, it says, U.S. frontline troops have not worked themselves into a fever of hatred. Enemy is the word used by their officers, but not by the grunts. These soldiers envision a foe scared, hungry, dirty, unable to escape. They regard the opposition as simple people like themselves, victims in their way, said Patrick Bishop in the London Daily Telegraph. When they hear the drum roll of another raid from the B-52s, their thoughts go to the unfortunates underneath. And the article describes the unimaginable consequences of the saturation bombings, but the impact upon Iraqi soldiers and U.S. soldiers alike, as the Telegraph described, instills a dread so deep that no amount of previous battle experience can harden them to it. One of the strange effects of this relentless pounding has been to stir great empathy on this side of the lines. Up on the Marine front lines, 105-millimeter howitzer battery begin the attack with salvos of something called Willie Peter, white phosphorus incendiary rounds that burn particles deep into skin and bone, followed with shells containing Bouncing Betty, the anti-personnel shrapnel grenades. These hit the ground, hop into the air, explode at stomach level. Gut rippers, they're called. Jesus God, said Corporal Lee Valverton of Enterprise, Alabama. Jesus God, have pity on their souls. How can you help but remember that these are human beings under this firestorm? The contrast between the human response of the soldiers and that of their commanders is revealed by John Balser again in the Los Angeles Times. The commanders express a cold-eyed view of the bombing and shelling. B-52s are confidence builders, said Marine Major Charles Clark. When you hear the bombs go off and you feel the ground shake, you know they're doing hurt to those people. But that is not the response of the grunts. That is not what the soldiers who have to do this fighting feel. Los Angeles Times, the Daily Telegraph. Our people, their people, victims of this relentless system. That's what Why War seeks to expose, to explain, to document, and around which to mobilize.
All right, well, we have four calls on the line now at 212-209-2950. It is 10 minutes to 5 at 5 p.m. You would be regularly listening to Taking Aim with Ralph Schoeman and Maya Schoeman. They've been on since 3 p.m. this afternoon sharing information with you. A special extended, expanded edition of Taking Aim. The premium that they're offering this afternoon is called Why War, for a pledge of $100 to 90-minute cassettes, brand new material. We're asking you to join those four callers on the line now, calling from Connecticut, calling from New Jersey, calling from Staten Island, calling from Brooklyn and the Bronx. I have a few more cards here. Also from Manhattan, of course, from Montclair, New Jersey. Meg O'Shaughnessy from Colorado. We have a call coming in from Colorado.
Great.
Listening to us on the internet at WBAI.org. New York City, Frederick Custer calling in. Thank you, Frederick. Porter Kirkwood Jr. from Baldwin, New York. Thank you very much, Porter. Thank you so much. Samuel from Hempstead, New York, calling in at 212-209-2950. Lester Niemark from Brooklyn, New York, calling in. There are six callers on the line right now at 212-209-2950. In about 10 minutes or so, 12 minutes, we'll be going back to the programming, taking us, maybe to about not quite to 5:30, uninterrupted during this fundraising drive, this fall fundraising drive, as we're in the second week of fundraising here at WBAI. Seven calls on the line now. Will Calhoun in the background from the CD, his second CD, Housework, solo drum performances. Let me change this up a bit. Maybe you want something from, let's see, from Senegal, or maybe something from, let's see, Angola. Let's try a little something different to spur
well,
you on.
Well, our introductory music is Youssou N'Dour from Senegal.
That's right. So let's try something and see if we can motivate you to those telephones and dial 209-2950. Take out a subscription to WBAI. A basic subscription is the least that you should be doing right now if you've yet to become a member of WBAI. 212-209-2950. Just a moment. Tori Kunda from the Best of World Music, of course, Putumayo. Just spoke to Alambe Brath, Ralph and Maya, and he was reminding me of the event taking place this weekend. I said, well, look, Alambe, he was busy doing something else, probably preparing for this. Maya and Ralph made mention of this twice early on the program. So everything is coming together, but we need you to go to your telephones right now and dial 209-2950. Join those four callers on the line now, taking out subscriptions to WBAI, getting the special premium that we're offering this afternoon, Ralph and Maya, Why War, for a pledge of $100 as we approach 5 p.m. We're going to be going back to programming in a moment, and I'm sure Ralph and Maya have a few bits of information that they want to share with you before we go back to the tape. So please make those calls right now for WBAI, listener-sponsored, commercial-free WBAI at 99.5 FM. This is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. The special premium this afternoon is called Why War, and we're going to explain that and lay that out for you this afternoon on WBAI.
And go back a little bit to the Philippines, because the other day I came upon an article that's from last year, actually. And, you know, the exploitation of the Philippines has been tremendous. And what's happened in the Philippines now is that a hospital, a primary hospital that serves 300,000 people, doesn't even have anesthesia. If a person goes in for an operation, the doctor has to write a prescription, and the person has to go out and privately purchase anesthesia for an operation. So the obvious question is, what happens if you don't have the resources to buy the anesthesia, to purchase the doctor's services? And the newspaper article says bluntly, you die. Now, this is the result of capitalist exploitation, of siphoning off the wealth of these countries and looking for the cheapest labor everywhere. As you know, people are losing their jobs in the United States as companies go overseas. It's an international enterprise, and that's what Leon Trotsky was saying. What happens with the development of capitalism is that the very notion of the nation, aside from a cultural sense of a nation, disappears for the capitalists. They are world conglomerates, and what the U.S. has done is assume hegemony to protect the interests of the U.S. corporations, of Boeing, of Lockheed, of Northrop Grumman, of the major oil companies, of ExxonMobil, of Texaco, of Chevron. That is what is happening. And so in Iraq, what you have not only is the exploitation, the hunt for all these resources, but it is to displace German and French and British oil companies, as well as the Soviet oil companies that have been linked to the Iraqis over the years. It's to absorb for the United States full control. And as goes Iraq, the designs are also to not just share the wealth with the feudal families, the oligarchies of the Emirates, and particularly of Saudi Arabia, another primary source of oil in the world, but even to have fuller control.
Well, the forward strategy is to discard and displace these oligarchies, which they consider no longer to be particularly stable. They want direct military fragmentation of the country and military occupation, each country in its turn. And
before you go on to that, and that's why you're seeing more and more in the press articles about how the U.S. is going in with direct military aid and control into Colombia to protect the oil fields. It's no longer the mythology that the United States is sending troops and aids and money to prevent a drug war. The truth is now revealed. The facade is stripped. The Green Berets move into Colombia's oil field. It was an article in the Daily Telegraph on October 12th. So this is the type of information that you are going to hear on Taking Aim and on other shows on WBAI, and that's why you should have all the phones ringing to contribute to WBAI. This is your opportunity to protect this valuable resource. That's 212-209-2950. And as our gift to you, we prepared a very special premium called Why War. And at this moment, I also want to remind you that we're going to be in New York next weekend. If you're just tuning in at 5 o'clock for our regular show, this has been a special 3-hour Taking Aim program, including excerpts of Why War, our premium for the WBAI Fund Drive. It's $100, two 90-minute audio cassettes that we know you're going to want to listen to over and again, and also share with your friends and family, or better yet, have them tune in and support WBAI and get our thank you gift. We'll be Friday in Harlem at St. Mary's Church on 126th Street and talking about corporate capitalism, the permanent war and state terror that capitalism unleashes upon the people of the United States and the rest of the world. And on Saturday, 9/11 false flag operation, going into the dynamics of what really is behind the events of 9/11 and what has resulted from them. And that's Saturday at 7 p.m. at St. Mark's Church at the corner of 2nd Avenue and 10th Street. And on Sunday, we're back in Harlem at Oberia Dempsey, along with Alumbe Brass, Africa Kaleidoscope, and we'll be dealing with the invasion of Iraq, as well as 48-2, the expulsion of the Palestinians under the cover of war. Now, in order for us to meet you and to enjoy our time, we need to know that we're going into this with WBAI on a good financial footing. So 212-209-2950.
Hold a second, Ralph. Hold that thought for a moment. We want to go on to the programming. We're going to be going up until 6 o'clock this evening. If you want to hear the rest of the material that Ralph and Maya have laid out, Why War? It's as simple as this. I was just visited, and We have to raise this money. We know that this audience that listens to Taking Aim every Tuesday without interruption, and I'm not ragging on you, I'm just pointing this out, that you listen, and you listen intently. Sometimes you tape the material, you share it with friends, and that's fine. But we're in a fundraising drive right now, the fall fundraising drive, and we need you, those of you who are listening, who have been listening, we need you to step up and take out a subscription and support this station, support this program, because we know that this program can do so much better. Now, we have raised just a little bit under $3,500, and we should be past that right now. We understand that this audience at 5 o'clock is the Taking Aim's core audience. So now it's up to you folks to come through for Taking Aim. We need you to go to those telephones and dial up 212-209-2950. Let's just lay it out so you understand, so there will not be any confusion. This is commercial free radio station. Now, many of you have heard it already, but just bear with me. If you made your pledge already, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We love you. But just stand by. Those of you who have been listening for several weeks and have yet to make this pledge, matter of fact, this fund drive is the first time that you've come in contact with a fund drive on WBAI with Taking Aim. We're asking you to go to your telephones and make the call right now. Join those four people that are on the line. That's fine. But there are 15 people in the tally room waiting for you to call. So we're asking you to go to your telephones and dial 209-2950. Basic subscription is $50. $25 if you're a student or senior citizen, someone on fixed income. If you can afford $100, you will get the premium Why War. Two 90-minute cassettes, never aired material here on WBAI. And Ralph and Maya have never aired this anywhere else but right here. It's here for you. We need you to make those calls for a pledge of $100. You can use Visa, MasterCard, American Express. You can send a check or money order. The people in tally are waiting to take your calls right now at 212-209-2950. If you're interested in the baseball cap, what kind of baseball cap? WBAI baseball cap, of course, or T-shirt, coffee mug, or any of those other things, you can make that call, and the tally people will guide you through the process very painlessly in about 2 minutes. They're very capable. They're very nice folks, and they'll take your money. So please make the call right now, 212-209-2950. We're going to go back to the tape, portion of the tape, because I can't play the tape for another 25 minutes unless you call. It's as simple as that. I'm sorry. I wish we could just say, Ralph, Maya, you know, just take a break, go drink some tea for 20 minutes, I'll call you back. Can't do that unless you call. We need to load up this telephone board with your calls of support. That's what we need to see. I don't want another visit, okay? I really don't. I think we're doing the best that we can do, but you need to come through right now. If you're listening, if you're interested in this material, we really encourage you, implore you. I'm not imploring you. We encourage you to go to the telephones and make those calls to this radio station right now for this program, Taking Aim with Ralph Schoeman and Maya Schoen. 8 calls on the line now. 7 more of you can call. Those of you in Westchester, somebody told me last week that Westchester is a very wealthy community, the wealthiest community in the United States. Well, fine. If that's so and you're listening and you're interested in what you're hearing, you've never heard this before, give us a call. Make a contribution, a matching fund. I don't think we've yet to say that. Certainly I haven't. This fundraising drive, this time out, make a $500 matching fund to WBAI. But you don't have to be come from Westchester to make that matching fund. From the Upper West Side, from the Lower East Side, from Brooklyn, the Bronx, Staten Island, say that a lot. We have a lot of listeners in Staten Island, and we thank you so very much for participating and for sharing with us. And I know you want to go back to the material. If we could get 5 more calls at 209-2950, Ralph and Maya, you can take off, and we'll go back to the material. But we need 5 more calls. That's one. We need 4 more calls at 212-209-2950 at WBAI 99.5 FM. Ralph, Maya,
Yes, indeed.
Get these people to call.
Keep the calls coming. In today's New York Times, is an article that describes refined plans for the war against the cities. And they talk about having, first of all, relied on the heavy artillery and intense firebombing that was used over Japan, even atomic weapons. But they go on to expose a document called Joint Publication 306, Doctrine for Joint Urban Operations. The paper was completed 1 month ago by the Joint Chiefs of Staffs, and incorporates the methods that they intend to learn derived from missions in Mogadishu, Belgrade, Port-au-Prince, and in the Russian fight for Grozny in Chechnya. You realize, of course, that Chechnya was absolutely and totally destroyed. Grozny leveled to the ground. And even more revealingly, perhaps, is the disclosure that the Joint Chiefs are going to model themselves on the Israeli operation in Jenin. And they are going to use the particular weaponry, the specially loaded tank rounds, for blasting apart the buildings of Baghdad as they did in Jenin. One last commentary about this. The operation in Jenin was based upon, as admitted in the Israeli press, a study of the Wehrmacht and SS plans for the destruction of the Warsaw Ghetto. These are the methods of imperialism. These are the stakes. Why war, brothers and sisters? Call, support this station. Let us bring you this information that is joined together in this resistance to the fascization of our culture and the devastation that is going to be inflicted on the suffering people of Iraq.
Thank you. Thank you, Ralph. Well, we're going to go back to the material now. People are responding. We have, I believe, 10 calls on the line now at 209-2950. And we will rejoin you in 15 minutes or so. We'll share some information with you and encourage you to make those calls at 209-2950 at WBAI. The program is Taking Aim, a special edition, an expanded edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. They have been on since 3 p.m. this afternoon. Show your support for this information. Show your support for this radio station that is providing this information and does so on a continuing basis, listener-sponsored and commercial-free. This is the Taking Aim audience that listens every Tuesday at 5 p.m. We encourage you to make those calls right now to 212-209-2950. We'll go back to the program and we'll come back to you, talk to you in just a bit.
Madness, madness tight on the heads of the rebels. The bitterness erupts like a hot blast. Rogue glass, the ritual of blood on the burning. Stirred by a coiling fighting. 5 nights of horror on the bleeding. Rogue glass, old blades as sharp as the eyes of hate and the stabbing. It's war amongst the rebels. Madness, madness, war.
Bombing and creating a pincer action in Iraq, forcing the Iraqis into an ever smaller area, destroying Iraqi radar systems and all their military and also civilian installations outside of Baghdad. The invasion of Iraq, the U.S. invasion of Iraq, has been on the drawing board, though, since the 1970s. It is not a new phenomenon of 2002. In January 1975, Pentagon analyst Robert Tucker wrote a study that was entitled Oil, the Issue of American Intervention, in which he stated why U.S. intervention was essential. Tucker wrote, without intervention, there is a distinct possibility of an economic and political disaster bearing more than a superficial resemblance to the disaster of the 1930s. It is impossible to intervene everywhere at once, so our intervention must locate a relatively restricted area, which, if effectively controlled, could contain a sufficient portion of present world oil production and proven reserves to end the price structure of world oil production by breaking the core of the cartel, both politically and economically.
Robert Tucker, on behalf of the Pentagon, identified the Arab core area and the shoreline of the Gulf as, quote, the new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador, unquote. And the London Sunday Times reported on June 9, 1975, that the United States National Security Council had completed a detailed review of a top-secret Department of Defense plan to invade Saudi Arabia and Iraqi oil fields, a region containing 40% of the world's known oil reserves at the time. This is 1975. Pentagon analyst Miles Ignotis, which is the pseudonym for Edward Luttwak, a long-standing associate of the what are now called the Chicken Hawks, the Pearls and the Armitages and the Wolfowitzes, the Gene Kirkpatrick neocons. Edward Luttwak, described as a Pentagon consultant with intimate links to high-level U.S. policymakers, published a report called Seizing Arab Oil.
It was published in Harper's.
Yes, in 1975. And it was a delineated setting forth of the timetable for seizing Arab oil, and all that was lacking was the pretext, the necessity to create a justification for a policy that was already designed to create war to seize oil. On January 19, 1979, Lawrence Mosher cited a high Defense Department official in Middle East International, quote, "We need a real boogeyman to be created, and then we will have to stop him. Because before we can use our rapid strike force and sell it, we will have to create the boogeyman and attempt to stop his efforts. It may turn out that this boogeyman will not be defined the same in Arabic as in English," he wrote. And by the late 1970s, the Israeli Mossad analyst Oded Yinon published an elaborate operational plan entitled A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s, unquote, that called for the fragmentation of each Arab state in turn, beginning with Iraq.
And recently, on September 22, 2002, the Sunday New York Times, in its magazine cover story, Stalking Saddam, How Paul Wolfowitz's Agenda Became the Bush Agenda, described Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz as treating, quote, a war with Iraq as a region-transforming opportunity. General Eric K. Shinseski of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the New York Times reported in July 2002, quote, informed the U.S. Army's new leaders with everything but a drum roll that Wolfowitz directed a secret assessment that marked Iraq for attack in 1979, that is, a dozen years before Desert Storm. And the Washington Post, on September 15, 2002, published a detailed account of how U.S. policy was to seize 230 billion barrels of Iraqi oil and reserves. The article in the Washington Post was headlined, "In Iraqi War Scenario, Oil is the Key Issue. U.S. Drillers Eye Huge Petroleum Pool."
To that end, on September 20th, 2002, Business Week published a detailed, previously unreleased document secured from the Center for Disease Control that went beyond the revelations of the Senate Banking Committee report of Senator Don Riegel. The Business Week expose provided a complete list of the biological and chemical agents supplied to Iraq by the U.S. military from October 1st, 1984 to October 13th, 1993. Quote, It included viruses, retroviruses, bacteria, fungi, several types of dengue fever, sandfly fever virus, West Nile virus, and plague-infected tissue, unquote. 118 contagious and legal biological agents were cited. And Scott Ritter revealed that the United Nations inspections were what he called a sham. They were collecting up the materials provided by the United States for the purpose of destroying Iranians' population and notably his working class after the Iranian Revolution. Scott Ritter labeled the inspections a spying operation for the CIA and the Mossad because he reported on a regular basis to both. And 85% of the areas inspected were then targeted for saturation bombing.
And in the Indian defense expert P. Jaranyam in the Indo-Asian News Service also revealed that an Indian intelligence report stated that the U.S. war against Iraq had nothing to do with the, quote, allegedly amassed weapons of mass destruction
that do not exist,
but had long been planned, quote, to control Iraq's huge oil reserves. And this exposé was confirmed by spokespersons for the Indian oil industry. Quote, control of Iraq's oil production will allow U.S. companies complete leverage in grabbing all subcontracting projects and determine Iraq's oil production, stated the top executive of India's national oil company. As the Indians also agreed, this is a move to reconstruct the Middle East. It will have far-reaching consequences for India because the long-sought U.S. control of Iraq's production.
Actually, the Indian intelligence and defense establishment made an assessment that concluded that the United States was preparing to seize military control in both Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. The war against Iraq, the Indian intelligence assessment concluded, would be first because before targeting Saudi Arabia and seizing their oil fields and relegating them to direct U.S. military control and departing with the feudal regime, the U.S. had to secure alternative sources of oil before they acted. That is why Iraq is first, concluded India's leading defense analyst, K. Subramanian. Now, this assessment was confirmed by intelligence agencies across the world. Quote, hawks fly higher in foreign policy, wrote the conservative Daily Telegraph defense analyst Toby Harden. President George Bush has outlined a new doctrine of using U.S. military might to impose its political will around the world. And as we have seen, this is not a new doctrine. This is the doctrine that drives forward American capitalism since the 1820s and 30s, since Josiah Strong described the Indian tribes as a people who God called upon to disappear so the U.S. could conquer its resources. The New York Times confirmed on October 11th the United States has a plan to occupy Iraq, a detailed plan modeled on the post-war occupation of Japan with the installation of an American-led military government, unquote. And the article continues, Iraq will be governed by an American military commander, probably General Tommy R. Franks, commander of U.S. forces in the Persian Gulf. There will not even be the facade of Iraqi CIA generals in this imperial design. Quote, in contemplating our occupation, the administration will scale back the role of Iraqi opposition forces. On Saturday, October 12th, the London Guardian confirmed these plans, as had the New York Times the day before. The U.S. plans to establish an American-led military occupation in Iraq, similar to the post-war occupation of Germany and Japan. It will need an estimated 75,000 troops at an annual cost of $16 billion. Iraq will be run by a senior American officer, probably General Tommy Franks, who will lead the assault. But Iraq is but the opening note. Nicholas Kristof confirmed in the New York Times on October 11th that the plans of Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, Kenneth Armitage, Dick Cheney, and the Israeli Mossad had been established, as we have been documenting, established, quote, since the 1970s, unquote. Revolving Door Monsters was the headline. The creation of monsters. Remember the call for creating a boogeyman? Here we have Christoph in the New York Times. The creation of monsters with which to terrorize the American people in the numbed acquiescence in imperial war and occupation is about oil and empire. When Mr. Cheney was running Halliburton, the oil services firm sold more equipment to Iraq than any other country. The Financial Times... The Financial Times, on November 3rd, 2000, reported that Halliburton had submitted $23.8 million of contracts with Saddam Hussein in 1998 and 1999. More broadly, Christoph stated in the New York Times article, the U.S. has a long history in which Saddam was our created monster. We've provided his army with the satellite intelligence, with the chemical weapons, with the nerve gas and the mustard gas. We shipped seven strains of anthrax to Iraq between 1978 and 1988. What is driving this? Asked Raad al-Qadiri of the Petroleum Finance Company in Washington. Not provocation. You've got a regime that has constantly kept its head down. This is driven by a very particular constituency in the United States. U.S. rulers, Christoph concluded, are pursuing the latest fashion in monsters served up to facilitate U.S. imperial war plans. Quote, Iran was the menace of the 1980s. In 1994, the vogue threat of the moment has changed. U.S. hawks pressed hard for a military confrontation with North Korea, Christoph writes. We came within an inch of going to war with North Korea. The Pentagon study concluded that 1 million people would be killed, including 100,000 Americans. The monsters, Christoph concludes, have proved changeable. The, quote, Iraqi threat, unquote, for which we are prepared to sacrifice thousands of American casualties, is simply another tinhorn dictatorship where CEO Cheney earns his bonus, unquote.
Why war? War for oil. War for hegemony. Why war? BBC Washington correspondent Tom Carver, in an article on October 11th, entitled U.S. Hawks Target the Entire Middle East, stated, beyond the talk of Saddam Hussein, there is another factor in White House war plans and ideology. The president's most senior advisors believe that the overthrow of Saddam Hussein is the first stage in a vision of the Middle East. Syria, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt are the next. As Tom Carver reported, the intellectual underpinning of this vision comes from Paul Wolfowitz, now the Deputy Secretary of Defense. It is shared by his boss, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, the Vice President, and the President. The BBC concluded, quote, America will use its military power all around the world. Before September 11th, their ideas never got beyond policy papers. September 11th gave them the opportunity they needed to put their ideologies into practice. Buoyed by the experience in Afghanistan, they are now ready for Iraq.
Is what we have called deja vu all over again. For as we have constantly reported and developed in our programming about the rationale for war, the entire policy was prepared in the 1970s when Iraq, the Gulf, and Saudi Arabia were targeted in the Pentagon and National Security Council for military seizure and described as the new El Dorado awaiting its conquistadors. And the detailed plan had been prepared by the Mossad and the Department of Information of the World Zionist Organization in 1979, published in its journal, Kivunim, Directions, in 1982. It called specifically for the fragmentation of each Middle Eastern country in turn into ethnic and religious components. It was a plan devised earlier by Israeli Foreign Minister Abba Iban to wage a continuous war to put the Middle East under U.S. and Israeli direction. Iban used the model of the millet system of the Ottoman Empire. This report was detailed and specific. Iraq will be first. Rich in oil, internally torn, it is guaranteed as our initial target. Its dissolution is even more important than that of Syria. We will dissolve Iraq into a number of statelets along ethnic and religious lines as in Syria during the Ottoman Empire. Basra, Baghdad, and Mosul and Shiite areas in the south will be separated from the Sunni and Kurdish north. This is in 1979. Egypt will then be torn apart like a second Lebanon. It is already a corpse. For us to break down Egypt territorially into distinct geographical regions is our political aim. Saudi Arabia will be next, followed by the Emirates of the Gulf. The entire Arabian Peninsula, he writes, is a natural for dissolution. The matter is inevitable. All the Gulf principalities in Saudi Arabia are built upon a delicate house of sand in which there is only oil. In Kuwait, the Kuwaitis constitute a quarter of the population. In Bahrain, the Shiites are the majority, but they are deprived of power. The United Arab Emirates, the Sunnis are in power. We will remove them. The same is true of Oman and Yemen. As goes Arabia, so goes the Gulf. And it was this Oded Yinon plan, this specific plan that was taken up by Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Kenneth Armitage, and the Committee on the Present Danger.
These plans were analyzed fully in the late 1978 by the Brookings Institution, with a detailed analysis of the frequency of U.S. military intervention between 1946 and 1975. The Brookings study, entitled U.S. Armed Forces as a Political Instrument, was prepared for the Defense Department's Advanced Research Projects Agency. The Brookings study revealed 215 times between 1946 and 1975, quote, in which the armed forces were used for specific political objectives. Echoing the statements today by Vice President Dick Cheney and President George W. Bush that nuclear weapons have not been ruled out in an attack on Iraq, the 1978 Brookings report documented that, quote, U.S. threats to utilize the strategic nuclear arsenal were made 19 times. U.S. armed forces were utilized an average of 7.2 times a year between 1946 and 1975, and once a month between 1956 and 1965.
Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. This particular package is available to you for a pledge of $100 by calling 209-2950. This is a special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. The name of this package is Why War. Now, just before we broke a few minutes ago, in about 5 or 7 minutes time, the phones were really ringing. People were responding. In, let's say, 5 minutes, we raised $3,000, and that's very encouraging. I know it is for Ralph and Maya, but we need to double what we just did. This is the Taking Aim audience, Tuesday from 5 until 6 p.m. If you want this information to continue over these airwaves, continue listener-sponsored and commercial-free, you like where it is, you appreciate the information, we need to hear from you now. 209-2950. The basic subscription is $50, but if you'd like to get the two 90-minute cassettes, please do make that call right now to 212-209-2950. I don't know what it was, Maya and Ralph, but whatever it was, I'm sure it's the information in and of itself that got people to respond. They did respond. They are responding now. We have 7 calls on the line right now, so we're asking you to go to your phones and make that pledge of support to this radio station, WBAI, and for Taking Aim.
Well, our Taking Aim family will respond to WBAI because this is our station, and we are so grateful to WBAI for putting Taking Aim on the air and keeping us there. And we're grateful to you because, as I said before, this is a social, a cultural, and a political network that we have in taking in WBAI. We've heard from people in Egypt, we've heard from people in Norway, we've heard from people in Seattle, and of course, all of you in the tri-state region of New York. When Dick Cheney, Vice President Dick Cheney, who has served in other administrations, this is a man who goes in and out of government, whether he was in Congress or whether he was the Secretary of Defense or whether he was the CEO of Halliburton. And remember that one of the prime areas of Halliburton's business is Brown and Root, which builds the bases, the army bases, and also runs them throughout Afghanistan and in other parts of the world, even the prison camps in Guantanamo, where many people are being sequestered, flown over from Afghanistan, interviewed, tortured, put in something similar to dog runs, isolated from each other. As Dick Cheney said to the veterans of foreign wars in August 2002, we must take the battle to the enemy. And that, it was the beginning of a war rather than its end. They're talking about permanent war. As we document in Why War, war is the motor force of policy, of U.S. policy. It's the way the hegemony of the capitalists is spread throughout the world. A war for resources, a war for markets, a war to prevent the resistance of peoples for the control over their own lives. And that is why we have to have an understanding. So we prepared a special gift, a special premium for WBAI for this sun drive. As we are about to launch into a major, horrifying, devastating destruction of the peoples of the Middle East, particularly the peoples of Iraq, who were already thrown back to the Middle Ages at the time, 10 years ago, of the first Gulf War. Why War? It's a three-hour program. Those of you who tuned in at 3 o'clock were lucky enough to know that we would be on then, got a glimpse of the beginning, and now you have another little excerpt of it. But we need to raise the funds to keep WBAI on the air, so you're only going to hear a little bit of Why War, and that's why for $100 you can have the full three-hour program. It includes historical analysis, political theory, detailed documentation of the plans for the current invasion of Iraq, and we conclude in the second part with a discussion of permanent war and what it means, the stakes for the working class, for you and me, for our brothers and sisters throughout the United States. Ralph?
Yes, you know, it's interesting that the press was attempting to whip up fear and trepidation in the American population with respect to the contrived events of 9/11. And one of their instruments for doing this was Zacharias Moussaoui. As you know, Moussaoui has been charged and is under trial as one of the presumptive conspirators. And great attention was being given to this case until a particular thing occurred, namely that Moussaoui stated that he wanted to testify before Congress and was prepared to disclose, and he said, with all of the documentation in my possession, of the FBI's plans for these attacks, how they not only engineered these attacks, but that they had monitored all those who were engaged in them. He had chapter and verse. He said the Congress had to hear it. He was ready to produce the evidence. From that moment on, the judge decided that no longer would there be public coverage allowed for the trial of Moussaoui.
Not only was it no longer public coverage of the trial of Moussaoui, but the legal documents that Moussaoui submitted, legal documents that have always been available to the public to to see, because they are public documents after all, that these legal documents were a security risk and would no longer be made public.
But
startling. That's the first time in the history of the United States.
And it's interesting that the very next day, the FBI raided, literally raided the offices of members of the Senate committee that was supposedly investigating the circumstances of 9/11, preparing to in any event, and all of the private diaries, records, and notes of the senators, particularly notes which had reference to any contacts with the press, with the media, were seized by the FBI. And the senators, and this was not restricted to members of the Senate, but to members of the House of Representatives as well, were informed that they were not to be in communication with the media about anything that bore upon these events. Now, these are not fantasies contrived by those who are seeking to find an explanation for the U.S. government's role. These are the documented procedures of a ruling class that has contrived the pretext for war and wants to shut down any inquiry into what has occurred.
An inquiry is the mode. Inquiry is the reason, the raison d'etre of WBAI and programs such as Taking Aim. And it's only with your support. You know, it's just a few times a year that we come and say, okay, folks, you and we keep the station on the air. We keep it going. And this is one of those moments. And our gift, Why War, is a gift. It's because your contribution is the is what keeps the station going. And we're
appealing to our listeners. We're appealing to our brothers and sisters. Sustain Taking Aim. Support WBAI. Enable us to continue this programming. Don't allow the dominant paradigm to be unanswered in this country.
As you know, over the months, we did so many programs about what really was behind 9/11 and exposed the terrors of the anthrax, for instance, that, in fact, when you really did the research, that the anthrax had to have been manufactured. It was a military strain that could only have been manufactured in labs such as the CIA lab, the lab with which the CIA contracts the Tillman Memorial, or at Fort Detrick in Maryland, where
the premier scientific publication in Great Britain documented that the anthrax involved had the unmistakable fingerprint of that produced in military labs in the United States. There wasn't any question about it. It was a military-derived product, and it bore the DNA and the print of the particular military product.
And we were saying that here on Taking Aim on WBAI before it became public knowledge. We also exposed that the invasion of Iraq has been actually going on since March. There has been almost daily bombardment. There are 30,000 troops in the Middle East poised for the actual invasion. And they have many troops already, special forces, in northern Iraq, on Iraqi sovereign territory. The word sovereign doesn't have much meaning in this day when the U.S. is occupying about two-thirds of Iraq, the northern tier and the southern tier, with daily, almost daily bombardment.
Well, we like to say on Taking Aim that it is not the crisis which is new. It is not the situation which has profoundly changed. It is rather that each generation endures the same spectacle of a ruling class visiting war upon its victims under one pretext or another.
Mm.
In fact, our listeners will recall that we have cited, as we do in the program we do on Why War, what the CIA and what U.S. intelligence and U.S. Rulers contrived in the Congo when Patrice Lumumba had led his nation to independence and became its first prime minister. The Central Intelligence Agency at that time engineered the severance of the two southernmost provinces of the Congo, Katanga and Kasai. rather in the way the British would have done in, with the southernmost province of Iraq, namely that of Kuwait, at the turn of the 20th century. But in the case of the Congo, Katanga and Kasai contained, at that time, 75% of the industrial diamonds and 80% of the titanium that the Pentagon used for missiles and attack aircraft. And under their design to destroy the independent government of Patrice Lumumba, he was labeled an agent of the Soviet Union, a threat to the peoples of Africa, and the CIA proceeded to arrange his murder. Malcolm X, addressing an audience in the United States, said the following: "We have to have a knowledge of history. The thing that has made the so-called Negro in America fail more than any other thing is your and my lack of knowledge regarding the real history that we are experiencing."
And that lack of knowledge will be more manifest if we do not have programs like Taking Aim on the air, if we do not have this radio station WBAI on the air so that we can bring you these programs. We have 10 minutes left to go. The Community Bulletin Board will be coming up at 6 p.m., so we have 10 minutes for you to go to your phones right now and dial 212-209-2950. Take out a subscription to this radio station. Support Taking Aim with Ralph Shoneman and Maya Shone.
We urge you.
Yes.
Please call.
Please do call. The package that they've put together is called Why War, for a pledge of $100 to 90-minute cassettes that they have never aired before over these airwaves. Now, people are responding now. Please take this opportunity to support this program. It's been on for however long have you been on, Ralph?
Since the end of December.
Since the end of December. Again, this is a listener-sponsored commercial-free radio. That's why we need your support. We can't do this without you.
Malcolm X said, "The media will deceive us. It deceives people, it disarms them, it demoralizes them, it deprives us of the knowledge without which we cannot confront our oppressors. The media are so powerful, it makes the criminal look like the victim and the victim look like the criminal. Yes, that's the press, the media, the irresponsible media. If we aren't careful, they'll have us hating the people who are being oppressed and loving the people who are doing the oppression. Malcolm said, "We have to speak truth to power. We have to know our history. We have to know the reality and document it, expose it, and mobilize around it. That's our aspiration. That's what this station is dedicated to do. That's what Taking Aim was created to attempt. We ask you, brothers and sisters, support the effort. Engage with us. Be part of that struggle. Call in your support now for Taking Aim for WBAI. For the alternative radio, the alternative media, to that controlled by our rulers."
And while you're dialing, I want to let you know that Ralph and I will be in New York City this weekend, the 25th, 26th, and 27th.
That's it.
So as you're making your contribution to WBAI, I want to let you know that on Friday at 7:30, we'll be in Harlem, an event sponsored by the Breck Forum of the Marxist School and the Harlem Anti-War Coalition, talking about the decline of capitalism and why it's moving towards permanent war and state terror.
Is there a contact number that people can find out more information? Because people have been calling the tally room. They're interested in coming down. So is there a contact number people can call?
Well, they can call us at 707-552-9995 or write to us at Taking Aim at PACBELL, that's PACBELL.net. Now, that's not a website. That's our email, so reach us directly, Taking Aim at PACBELL.net. But it's St. Mary's Church, which is really well known in Harlem on 126th Street. And that's on Friday at 7:30.
That's 521 West 126th Street.
And then on Saturday, we're at St. Mark's in the Bowery, another well-known church. That's 2nd Avenue and 10th. And that's sponsored by ourselves and the Lower East Siders for Peace and Justice. And we'll be talking about 9/11. And that's 7 o'clock.
Very
and
good.
Then Sunday, back to our favorite place at Barrio Dempsey, with the Lumbe Brass, our cohort who's been Ralph close friend for at least 30 years, or even longer, 40 years. Alumbe and Ralph and myself will be talking about the invasion of Iraq, the plans for the invasion, and tying it in with the expulsion of the Palestinians, which will take place, we are assured, that that's their plan, under the cover of war. And we're doing that at 5 p.m. so people can be out in time to get to work the next day, and that's Sunday afternoon. Now, we're doing this, and we want to go in feeling good about it, and that we can really feel good if you call WBAI and let the station know that how important this station is for you and how important Taking AIM is to have on WBAI.
Well, people are responding right now, Maya. We have 14 calls coming in right now at 212, area code 212-209-2950. And they're calling in with a basic subscription, which is $50, $25 if you're a student. They can put that on their credit card, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, or they can say, well, we'll send you a check or a money order. We can do that as well. We can accommodate you many ways. Electronic funds transfer, Visa, MasterCard, American Express. The premium, again, is Why War. It's a special edition of Taking AIM with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. We only have 5 minutes left to go in this program. We really want to go out very, very strong this afternoon. We're up over $10,000 right now. We can make it $15,000 if you call with your support. If 30 of you, 40 of you call with a basic subscription to WBAI, and maybe 10 more of you call with this particular premium that's being offered for $100, not a lot of money. You can pledge on the installment plan if you have to. The people in Tally will make some accommodation for you and with you. Please call the number now, 212-209-2950. Ask for Why War by Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Two 90-minute cassettes. Please make those calls now. Keep those folks in Tally busy throughout this next few minutes and on into the news hour. Coming up at 6 p.m. will be a report of the day's news with the WBAI news team, the local news from 6 till 6:30, and then at 6:30 p.m., free speech radio news, national and international news with free speech radio news. Make those calls right now, 212-209-2950. Maya, Ralph, let's hear from you one more time, talking to these people, talking to your audience, asking them to call with their pledges of support.
Listen to what Malcolm said. You and I live in a very deceitful and tricky society, in a very deceitful and tricky country, which has a very deceitful and tricky government. We have to be on guard at all times. We have to know how they work this deceit. We have to know how they work these tricks. The FBI feeds information to the press, and they do it very skillfully. They maneuver the press on a national scale. The CIA maneuvers the press on an international scale. These people master in imagery and image-making. They give us the image of extremists. When we explode against injustice that have been heaped upon us, they use the press to make it look like we're the vandals. We have let these people maneuver us into thinking that it's wrong to fight them when they're fighting us. They're fighting us in the morning, they're fighting us at noon, they're fighting us at night, and they're fighting us all in between. We still think it's wrong to fight back? Brother and Sister Malcolm was summoning us. We need the programming, we need the information, we need to be able to reach out with the truth. We need you to support Taking AIM. We need you to call in your support for WBAI. Bring truth to power. Let's mobilize our people. Let's fight back.
Thank you so much. Thank you so very much, Ralph Schoenman. And thank you so much, Maya Schoen. Really appreciate your effort this afternoon. The whole board is just about full. Maybe one line is available. You can call now. If you get a busy signal, please call back. And make that call, make that pledge of support to WBAI. Say you support Taking AIM with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Thank you very much, Ralph.
Thank you, Michael.
Very, very much, Maya.
Yes, it's been a real pleasure, and we'll be with you in the studio next week.
Okay.
And again, brothers and sisters, keep those phone lines lit up. We need you.
Remember, a busy signal is just an opportunity for you to redial.
That's right. Thank you. Thanks again. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye. Take care.
continue to make those calls. 212-209-2950. Taking Aim, a special edition with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen on from 3 o'clock this afternoon. From 3 until just now. We're going to leave it right there. And we're going to move into the community bulletin board in just a moment. Let's change the rhythm just a moment. Uh-huh. A little dialing music, okay? Community bulletin board upcoming over WBAI.